If you're joining us tonight, we're exploring the psychology of the paranormal with Anne Celine and Ron Murphy. We've been discussing different things, elements of the paranormal, trying to understand and wrap our brains around what is taking place. What can we learn from the experiences we've had, both in reality and with the high strangeness? How do we discern between what's real and what is a expectation? How do we proceed in this field in a way that we can become experts at what we're researching? It's a big, big amorphous problem. It's a big smoky cloud we can't put our arms around. We can see it's there. We know it exists, but we have no definition for any element of it yet. That's what makes this field so confounding and so lovely to be a part of, because as you brought up in the last segment, Anne, talking to people, everybody's got a different take on it. Everybody's got a different perspective on it. And maybe you could learn something from their camp that you're missing on your puzzle. And if we could all come together and put this puzzle together, what an amazing image we may end up with. The problem is so many people are rooted in their belief systems that they can't traverse the mileage to look at another side of what this means. Because I grew up Christian. Therefore, everything is a demon, because they're just trying to confuse us and confound us. They're just trying to make us question everything that we learned in the Bible. Well, you know, the Bible, and then I have to remind people, the Bible is filled with people talking to the dead. The Bible is filled with miracles and giants and strange lights in the skies. The Bible is packed full of the paranormal. And, you know, I think that's why so many people that are Christians or have different faiths and beliefs that follow written texts like that find comfort in it, because there is a high woo factor to that. And it's okay to embrace all of it and not have one simple answer. I think once we get past the need and desire to pigeonhole everything, the magic's going to reveal itself more. Once we feel that we don't need to explain, well, dog man is XYZ, whereas a werewolf is an ABC, whereas a skinwalker is a DEF. How the hell does anybody know? We're all guessing. I mean, listen, Dogman to me is still new, right? Linda Godfrey introduced me to Dogman. So to me, Dogman only began existing 12 years ago. I'd never heard of Dogman. I've heard of Bigfoot. I've heard of Chupacabra. I've heard of the Mothman. Dogman, I was like, how stupid are people? We're just going to start throwing more stuff. Oh, no, David, it's not. Look. There are articles in the newspaper talking about this dog man creature, but weren't those considered werewolves or skinwalkers? But then they referred to them back in the 1900s, early 1900s as a dog man. And I realized, wow, there is so much more phenomena taking place that I just don't have a name for. Now, do you think in the case of things like dog man, skinwalker, dog man, werewolf, all the same thing, just the different titles like Yeti, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Skookum, Skunk Ape, Dirty Monkey, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah. So from the linguistic point of view, there's something called the Zapper Warp Hypothesis. And basically that...
Watch the anger, Ron. This is a family show. It's called the what?
You have to beat that up. It's named after two people. Well, one gentleman's name is Zapper, and the other guy's name is Warp. So it's the Zapper Warp Hypothesis, which states that language creates reality. So without the verbiage, whenever you were out in the woods and you saw something that you could not explain, then it could be, you know, a hairy wild man or something. But now as part of our vernacular, we have things like Dogman, Bigfoot, and a litany of other type of creatures. So now our reality is shaded by the words that we can use as well. And that's a little bit more difficult, because look at the Chupacabra that you stated. At first, whenever I was younger, you know, this was some sort of spine-covered animal with a flicking tongue that looked kind of like a demonic porcupine. And now all of a sudden, it's a blue dog that's running amok in San Antonio. You know, so see how quickly things have changed. But we still use the same name for it. I think that there's so much that goes into this from the way that we use words to the way culture also informs us about what should be out there and what shouldn't be out there.
Oh, trust me, I know. I've still got burnt feelings on the whole Mandela effect, because I was talking about it on my show 10 years before she came out and called it the Mandela effect. my episode was entitled "Who Brought Kirk Douglas Back from the Dead?" So if anything, it should have been the Kirk Douglas effect, because everybody remembered him dying in the late 80s. How the hell is the guy lived to be 103 when everybody remembers he died 35 years prior? But somehow my name didn't stick because it wasn't Nelson Mandela. It's interesting to me, right? Everybody brings a different title to it and it makes it theirs. Then it's mine. If it's, I can't talk about the Mandela effect lovingly because I'm still burned inside, but it's not the Kirk Douglas effect. But right. But again, there people find a stepping stool to make themselves be heard above the crowd, right? Well, I could talk werewolves. Nobody believes in werewolves because that's horror movie, but nobody's talking about Dog Man.
Right. Step up
the plate and I've got Dog Man. What? Dog Man. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Hey, just so we're on the same page, Kirk Douglas is indeed dead, isn't he?
He is now.
Oh, I think I was going to say,
Yeah, he was like 102 when he died. It's ridiculous. I remember when he died in the 80s.
Yeah.
His career either. I mean, I remember when he died. And it's crazy to me that he's still living, you know, or still lived like another, well,
for right. Yeah. And this is a beautiful illustration on how psychology works, right? Unless we are stepping into some sort of alternate reality or an alternate timeline, then we can see how faulty our perception of reality is, and you know, one person's belief can then trigger how I look at the world as well too. So yeah, the Mandela effect is one of those things, but I kind of like the idea of the Kirk Douglas effect.
Thank you. Douglas, let's call it the Douglas paradox so we get our own twist. Douglas paradox.
Perfect.
In experiencing this though, right, you misremember things. And now I can tell you this is going to continue to grow, the Kirk Douglas paradox, right? Because we're constantly being fed fake information. How many times a month do you see on social media, "Oh my God, Elvis died"? No, he did. He died in 77, but somebody remembers seeing that headline today. Therefore, they think today is when Elvis died. Or, you know, they see reference to something of a celebrity's death who did not in fact die. It was another guy named Ron Murphy, but they ascribed it to you, right? So it's interesting how we misremember things due to the quick flashes of information we're fed at this point. So that is going to have a deep lasting impact on our psychology.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's one of those things too, where not only should we accept influence and really be careful about, you know, the people that we interact with and the things that we interact with, such as what we see on social media. But, you know, I can't speak enough to being the eternal student and being able to even change your own beliefs and being able to, like, I was on a podcast once and he said, you know, you've changed so much from where you first began, because where I first began was just an experiencer. But now I look at things under a much different microscope. So you have to be.
Well, sure. It's in order to become more famous, Anne. You're just jumping on the same bandwagon Ron was mentioning. How dare you utilize our field of the paranormal to become more famous, Anne?
I hear yourself as an attractive woman.
Yeah.
We have to take a quick break. We'll come back and give Anne a chance to finish her polluted thinking right here on our show. This is the Paranormal 360. Okay, Anne, let's see. Here's a shovel. Let's see how deep you can dig this hole and continue going.
I was just going to say that, you know, we have to be willing to be, you know, we have to be willing to kill our darlings, so to speak, change our original hypothesis, because that's how we really grow. And that's how we can contribute to the field, because I really did believe for the longest time that my experiences were one particular thing. I was actually going to write a book. I'm not writing it anymore, but the
Hold on a second. You believe they were one particular thing. So you've evolved to believe that there are multiple things going on.
Yes.
So
yes.
Like Ron, you brought up earlier, Ron, that isn't it interesting? They start off one way on a TV show, then suddenly they remember having Bigfoot encounters and UFO encounters.
And I'm not sure if I can go on podcast with you anymore.
You need to coordinate this before we talk again.
What I'm trying to say is the name of the book was Paramorphosis.
Okay.
And it's where you take a situation that you had and it morphosizes into something completely different. And one of the biggest examples was the one that I opened with, where in the beginning I thought that it was a paranormal alien-like encounter, but then found out that it was an actual traumatic human encounter.
Right.
And so the longer that we're in the field and the more that we deep dive, not just into the field, but also into ourselves, things do take on a metamorphosis and we see the depths and the changes that can become.
Well, let's talk about trauma normal, because in essence, though, what you're describing also could fit into the satanic panic of the 1980s, when suddenly everybody that was ever sexually abused or this, that, or the other, it was because they were part of a satanic cult and their family was doing this. I don't know if you two remember that.
Yes.
Yeah, it was all over the place. And, you know, it's interesting because that's another line we have to be cautious of. People love to be afraid. They love to have a boogeyman in the closet. They love to start looking for problems where there aren't problems. Mm-hmm. In your instance, your brain took over a very uncomfortable, bad situation and replaced it with, I'd rather not believe this is Uncle John. This is an alien.
Yeah.
And you project this thing. How then do we make sure that the pendulum doesn't swing all the way to the other side, where now everybody's questioning every paranormal experience, which they should do, but not ascribing psychological or sexual abuse to it?
Well,
right.
That's the thing is, in my past, there were things that I didn't really want to look at. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things that we do know, but we just try to bury it. We don't want to face it. And so when we finally are able to face those things, we can see that it, you know, the signs were there all along. So if we take a situation, which, you know, I've had several other experiences since then that I know for a fact was not, you know, part of something right. like that. And so, I mean, I think that, I mean, I can't speak to therapy enough. I think that it's important for everybody. And you don't have to have something wrong with you to go to therapy. You can go to therapy to have a deeper relationship with yourself. And I think that the really number one thing in this field is that if we were to really cultivate the relationship with ourselves, the way that I treat you is a reflection of me. So if I'm treating you like crap, and everything, then that's because I'm in turmoil inside. It's not because you're a bad person. It's because I'm having trauma that is unhealed. And if we can do that with ourselves, then the way that we interact with everybody and other experiencers and everything, it's going to deepen, you know, our footing in the field and our understanding of these things.
Ron, it's beautiful. Yeah, you look like you were going to lean on something as well. What did you want to take with that?
Well, I was going to say you've done an excellent job, Dave, connecting the dots, because I was going to mention about culture again. So we talked about the Mandela effect, right? And then you brought up the idea of satanic panic. And I remember as a kid watching that Geraldo Rivera special, and then I assumed that everything was satanic, right? So in my little mind, in the zeitgeist of the time, everything that went bump in the night now was demonic, right? And I had to be careful because I didn't want to open up any kind of doors that should remain closed. And that's what happens here as well, too. So this is definitely a two-edged sword, and I think that Anne will agree. Because what happens is, what happens if people are having an experience and it becomes almost like a witch hunt where they're just saying that somebody has perpetrated something on me, whenever that is not the case? See, there's this very scary flip side of this as well, too, that this trauma may not be imagined. It may have actually happened, and nobody human was at fault, right? Because, look, I love the idea of the paranormal, right? I'm still a paranormal investigator. So psychology aside, I also am acknowledging that there are things that happen to us that can't be explained.
I like that. It is tough, though, dealing in this field, because I've seen a lot of broken people. that are dealing with things that are they feel are out of their control. And oftentimes they don't want to hear it's something psychological, that it's something that, you know, I know back when Ghost Hunter started, they had a pretty deep evaluation talking to people. And are you on medication? Are you on this? Are you on that? And, you know, that really upset the apple cart for a lot of people, because what if I am on medication? Does that make my claims any less important? Because what if that medication is evening me out the frequency, evening out the chaos that's in my brain, therefore allowing me to experience things, to see things?
Absolutely.
That's one point that we just actually were talking about in the presentation that we just did the other weekend, that even though you have an experience, it doesn't matter what it was in the end, whether it was paranormal, a person, your imagination, whatever it is, that doesn't take away from the experience and all the things that happened after that. I wouldn't be here talking to you both if it wasn't for the things that I experienced, and I wouldn't change that for the world. So, you know, and that's the big thing that I think people should understand and try to look at it so they're not afraid to really analyze, okay, was it paranormal? Was it me? Was it a family member? Like, it's okay to search that, because whatever happened afterwards, the healing, the connections, the life that you led afterwards, your testimony afterwards, none of that gets taken away.
Exactly. And your healing not only heals yourself, but also heals those around you as well, too. And that's a very important concept as well. When we talk about frequency and vibration, as you said so eloquently earlier in the show, Anne, what you put out, what is going to be received back to you as well, too. And I just couldn't say it any better than that, but I just want to bring it up because it does have so much to do with frequency and vibrations and how you put yourself into that wavelength.
Well, I want to talk about that when we come back after this break. Frequency, vibration, metaphysical blah, blah terms. Is there something legitimately to it? If so, what can we do to put ourselves in different places? I know there's a lot of advice from grounding, just taking your shoes off and standing in the grass and digging your toes into the dirt or the sand. No, thanks. I don't like sand or dirt in my feet, but I get that there is that concept that there are things we can do to ground. There are things we can do to change. I know music is powerful for me in changing my vibration and allowing me to have different experiences. It also works as an amazing trigger object at some haunted locations, because it's like you're investing into their memories as well, and you're helping to draw them out. So let's talk a little bit about that when we return to the Paranormal 360.
Now, during the Halloween season, the veil between the worlds gets thinner and the chills get real. Oh, so very real. Something is waiting in the dark and it's calling your name. So answer the call this Halloween season for the Paranormal 60 presents Halloween Haunts and Hijinks, October 9th through the 12th, for a supernatural weekend you'll never forget. It's being held at the historic haunted Palmer House Hotel in Sauk Center, Minnesota. Join Dave Schrader from the Holzer Files, Ghosts of Devil's Perch, and the host of the Paranormal 60 podcast. He's teaming up with Dalen Spratt from Ghost Brothers and Phantom Forensics. And we have heart-centered intuitive Diet Renee for a weekend packed with spine-tingling experiences. You'll have two nights of live investigations and paranormal experiments, interactive workshops, gallery readings, and meet and greets, live presentations with experts themselves. This isn't just an event. It's a doorway to the unknown. So you have to ask yourself, do you dare cross it? Now, tickets are limited, so please book your Halloween Haunts and Hijinks adventure now at darknessevents.com. Again, that is darknessevents.com.
There's that tricky word, experts, again. Did you hear that? In an ad I'm a part of, my event, I'm listed as an expert. Who the heck do I think I am?
Yes, I will tell you, I stand corrected. I think that you're... definition of what an expert is has indeed won me over. So I will now concede and admit that there can indeed be experts in this field.
All right. Good night. Thank you all for tuning in. Now that I've done it, we can end the episode. Ron Murphy and Ann Celine, our guests. Let's talk. And I, of course, I'm joking around about that. I just think it's funny the use of that. And I have had people reach out regarding the term. I think it's something we need to breeze past a little bit. I wouldn't want somebody coming into my house that's an exorcist that their only background is that they've watched a lot of horror movies and they own a Bible. But I'm not opposed to learning what they think they know as well. Let's talk about the concept of vibration, right? And I'm sorry, what was the other term? Vibration and
frequency.
Frequency. Yeah. You think for a radio guy, frequency would have been the first word I remember. What exactly does vibration and frequency mean to you, Ann?
Oh my gosh. For me, I have to jump right into manifestation because I believe in the power of the mind and I believe that separation is an illusion. So if everything is made up of a certain energy, right? And we are also a part of that energy, then when we think something, when we really concentrate on it, we're cultivating more of that particular frequency. And then as we cultivate more of that, I think that, because we're magnetic, we, pull more towards us. So, and I've seen this in my own life. I started out living in Oregon and I had a very different life. And I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would ever fly on a plane. I never thought I'd move outside of Oregon. Now I've flown and I've been all over the U.S. I've been to Ireland. I moved to Texas for 2 years. Now I'm living in upstate New York and it's just incredible. But I didn't, it's one of those things where I put in the work. I, put that energy in, to manifest it. And so, and again, this goes back into our thoughts create our reality.
So is intention and manifestation the same thing as vibration and frequency then?
It's all together. There's no, Ron, I think you're fantastic at this.
I like the idea of this interconnectedness, this universality, right? And vibrations is what intentions I put out there, right? And the frequency is kind of like that universal frequency that's out there, whether you call it a God frequency or what have you. It's kind of like that baseline frequency that we as human beings, for the most part, have decided to step away from. So everything that we see outside of our window seems foreign to us, but that's simply because we left that frequency behind. Now, when we talk about frequency and vibrations, we can see this done in a very practical manner and experimental types as well, too, like Dr. Emoto and the idea that thoughts can shape water whenever it's crystallized, or how it works whenever you grow plants. If you talk nicely to a plant, it tends to grow nicer than if you talk negatively to a plant. And then imagine if you do that to a child. This is all interrelated. All these kind of vibrations are out there. And the other way I look at it as well, too, if you think the universe is like this great big pond in your backyard, and you have these pebbles of intention that you can throw in there. Well, if I throw out a negative intention, that ripple effect is going to go to so many people that I don't even know, but it's going to be negative because that was my intention. So I like to stress, if you're going to start throwing pebbles, make sure that it has a little bit of goodwill behind it. And that's a part of a lot of Eastern philosophies as well, too. Buddhism and a lot of Japanese thoughts, like especially in Reiki, the idea that you wish everything goodwill. I think that just makes everything, again, vibrate at a frequency that is putting more people at ease. Because if you're not at ease, then there is dis-ease, which where that name comes from, as a matter of fact.
Right. Well, and that's, you remind me too, I constantly say that we have come into the great forgetting. There is a lot of historical amnesia. And understanding how frequencies work in regards to healing, in regards to manifesting, you can see that in ancient history. It's a matter of how do we bring it back? How do we cultivate it to remember?
Yeah, that studies the tough part, right? And the problem is that there are terms like vibration and frequency that are so, I don't know, you can't pigeonhole what that even means, right? And sometimes those woo words are the ones that push people away from even wanting to explore further into this field and understand it. Intention manifestation seems to be a more acceptable version in some ways, but the concept that there, we know everything vibrates at a certain frequency, everything, right? I mean, the theory is I could put my hand on this wall and theoretically within 1,000 or 2,000 years, my atoms and its atoms are going to align, that my arm's going to go through that wall. It'll drop off on the other side because it's that quick, but right. That is taking place, that our whole conception of, or perception of what is real is really just vibrating molecules. Mm-hmm. And we can affect and change them. I've seen it happen, in the way that we've getting locked out of my dad's house as a kid, and my dad's on the way home. He's going to kill me that I left my keys again. What am I going to do? And I'm talking to the window. Come on, just open up for me. Just for God's sakes, open up and let me in. And I put my hands on it and it slides up. And I climb through that window, shut it, lock it just in time to see my dad pulling in the driveway. So I've got the keys in hand that I left on the counter. I've seen will change things, right? And people say, well, that's insane, Dave. You obviously just didn't tighten it the last time you were there. No, that conversation happened after I tried lifting every window and couldn't get them to open. And then when I started begging the window, all right, fine, just this time and let me back in, right? But is that a paranormal experience or is it really a hypernormal? Is it a normal experience? Are we capable of so much more that we just don't give ourselves credit for? I think people step away real quickly. We're going to have to take a break, but I think people step away from just how powerful we are as humans and what kind of life we can intend and create for ourselves. And I'd love to hear from you people. If you've got thoughts on this, feel free to email me, dave@paranormal60.com. That's dave@paranormal60.com. We'll come back. We've got one more segment together right here on the Paranormal 360. All right. Time is going to fly in this last segment. It always does. Interesting conversation. Boy, I feel like this could be a 15-hour episode as we discuss these things. Do you think there are certain people that are more predisposed to having paranormal experiences? And is that because of the frequency that they live? Is that because, let's face it, people from all walks of life have had something weird happen to them, whether they're believers or not. Like, how many times have you two met somebody and they're like, what do you do? You're into the paranormal? Seriously, do you believe that? When I was a kid, I had this, right? Immediately they go into their explanation, but that's the only thing that's ever happened to me. So therefore the supernatural is not real. Where do we go from here?
It's one of those things where I truly believe. So if we look at frequency and atoms and molecules, technically I'm not sitting in a chair. It's just a bunch of little atoms that are together creating this make-believe solid, right? So we can look at this on a scientific level, microscopic and all that, and it's real. And so we just don't quite understand how our thoughts can interact with atoms such as what's making up this chair right now. However, if you look at, because I have these, I requested some FOIA documents on remote viewing. And
FOIA documents, the Freedom of Information Act, just so our listeners can keep up.
Yes, sorry. And it's, it goes over different protocols on how to do remote viewing. And I really, truly believe that the part in our brain, that I think it's we're all capable of it. I don't think anybody's just special. I think that it's a muscle that needs to be worked out, no different than when we're lifting weights. Our brain is a muscle. So the more that we practice something, look at both of you, all your knowledge within this field. Why? Because of the practice that you've done, how many years you've studied, the fact that you're still that eternal student. So I believe that the more we're tuned into something, again, it's back to the magnetism. It's going to circle back and you're going to have those experiences.
But the more you believe you're tuned into something, isn't it also the other side, that the more likely you're able to fool yourself with experiences because you want them to happen? You want this to be real?
And that's where we have to bring in the psychology and the discernment. And that is where, I'm fascinated, and I hope that we can expand this particular you know, avenue, so that way we can understand the difference.
And that's why shows like this are so utterly important, because this gives us a...
Could you repeat that?
So, my friend, this is the reason why these shows are so important.
No, I think you said this show. This show.
This is why Dave's show is so important, because it provides a forum by which we can present ideas and have a diplomatic talk about, you know, opposing viewpoints or whatever. Because every time I come on a show or I present someplace, I don't want everybody to agree with me, right? I want to hear your point of view as well, too, because you're going to see the world far different than I see it. So it's important to have shows like this in order to have an active conversation. Now, my opinion about the paranormal is I think that we are naturally indoctrinated out of believing it. I think that we are born. I think the children, you know, I've seen my babies, you know, smile at things that aren't there. I think that we're all in tune to this wonderful universe around us, right? And then as time goes by, like Ann said about this great forgetting, there's also a personal forgetting as well, too, when we start moving from that infant, naive, innocent stage. And then as we become more experienced with the world around us, we now become something completely different than what we were meant to be.
We have just about 3 minutes left together here. And what do you really hope for in the future of paranormal studies?
I really hope that we can come together, that the walls that we have up are, you know, taken down, so that way we can hear the opposing opinions. I think that that's really important, because to look at things through the eyes of excitement and, you know, wanting to be a student and wanting to learn, I think that that is the most valuable. And then we can come together and really put those puzzle pieces together. So I'm hoping that a bridge is formed.
Ron, how about you? What do you see for the paranormal field and its execution and education?
Right. Well, I would love to see conferences being held on college campuses rather than some sort of, you know, gazebo out in the middle of the woods someplace. I think that we need to have an interdisciplinary talk about these things, from a sociological, you know, a paranormal, a psychological aspect, to not only figure out about the paranormal, but more importantly, to figure out who we are as human beings.
I like that. Now, just out of curiosity, why not the gazebo in the middle of the woods? If you're into Bigfoot, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but seriously, wouldn't that be the best place to put yourself in an environment that's conducive to having those type of experiences?
Yeah, that's where we were at last week. Actually, I did a presentation in the gazebo in the middle of the woods. So
you know, on the imaginary dog man philosophy.
but in order to... I guess to be a little bit more accepted, you know, Benjamin Bradford for the Skeptical Inquiry said, you know, the main problem with like these paranormal researchers is the researchers themselves. You know, I would love to be up on a panel talking beside a sociologist about, you know, or historians as well, too, because this stuff doesn't come out of a vacuum. We've had stories of wild men and ghosts since the very beginning of humanity. We've had these things happen to us. So let's talk about that. Why do we need these things? Why in the 21st century do we still need things to go bump in the night?
We need more academics.
Because people love to be afraid. That's why roller coasters and horror movies, why things outside of our normal life give us that spark. It's getting us the most death as we can get without actually dying. So I think that there'll always be an interest in that. I want to thank you both, Ron Murphy and Celine. Thank you for coming on the show and spending some time here with me tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Tonight, Ann Celine and Ron Murphy showed us that the paranormal is not only an external mystery, it's an inner one. Frequencies and vibrations, they may connect science and metaphysics, but it's our minds that interpret them. Archetypes, monsters, legends, they live in every culture because they speak to something universal in us, our fears, our survival instincts, and our search for meaning. By looking at the paranormal through both psychology and investigation, we begin to see a larger picture emerging, one where belief, myth, and genuine unexplained phenomena overlap. And in that overlap, perhaps lies the truth. So may the darkness of this world be just a little brighter with the information we share here each week. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you again next Sunday. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360.